We have explored the three major causes for low or challenged self-esteem. We have also explored the goal of being real and genuine and authentic, and without the need to impress and pretend and feel ashamed and fear. We are going to dedicate the rest of this program to ways in which you can improve and even heal your self-esteem. There are six of them. We'll discuss in great detail loving yourself, connecting with people, mentally creating in such a way that it'll improve your self-esteem, and completing tasks, taking action, affirmations, and meditation. And I will provide detailed information to assist you with each one of these practices. For some, it may be necessary to begin the journey in the hands of a licensed therapist, trained to assist in processing childhood traumas, addictions, or other difficult challenges that can keep us stuck in an emotional cocoon. Others may be ready to move forward with self-determination, perhaps at times with a little nudge of direction and encouragement from a coach. Well, as you listen to these six practices, ask yourself, can I do this? Not perfectly at first, but can I do this? If so, then begin. If not, seek therapeutic assistance, because you are worth it. Improving self-esteem can be a lifetime journey. You know, we don't live in a vacuum, and crazy life experiences seldom wait for us to be whole and complete. And your task may be doubly difficult if you're in a committed relationship or are a caregiver for a child or children. You have the added responsibility of lifting and building your companion and building the next generation so they'll be better equipped to face the challenges of life whole and complete. This can be difficult if you are in need of healing. Again, you do not have to do this alone. Let's start with the first practice, which is love yourself. Now, self-love is more about reverence for the infinite and intrinsic gift of life, starting with your own life. It is more about honoring and magnifying the gifts that have already been given than lamenting the ones that seem to be missing. Self-love is more about focusing on contribution to the world than the endless accumulation of things. You know, just the opposite of self-love is exemplified by the narcissistic Gaston in the classic Beauty and the Beast. This pathetic character was so self-absorbed that his obnoxious antics repelled Belle, a self-respecting, self-confident, and deeply grounded woman. So self-love is about reverence for life, honoring and magnifying the gifts we've been given, and focusing on contribution. Dr. Hartman poignantly punctuates the need for this practice of self-love. He writes, "Unless you like yourself, you cannot like anyone else. Unless you feel that you are of importance, nothing can be important to you. You must feel that you are important. You must take yourself seriously. If you take yourself as an accident that just as well might not have happened, you will dislike your own self. And then you're lost. And you're a loss to the universe. You cannot enrich the world. And you have been created to enrich the world." End quote. We do not want to gain the whole world, you know, the fame and fortune, and yet lose our own soul. We do not want to miss the mission for which we have been uniquely and often painfully prepared. We do not want to look to titles and possessions and performance as the primary means of determining our worth. These things can go away in a flash. Oh, I know this all too well, and many of you do as well. In his writings on this subject of the intrinsic and infinite value of the person, Dr. Hartman concludes that liking oneself is not an easy matter. In truth, philosophers have tried to give us a method of how to do this from Socrates to Kierkegaard. If a healthy self-esteem requires that we first love ourselves unconditionally and intrinsically, And it does. Dr. Hartman suggests that there are four critical steps. First, know thyself. Second, choose thyself. Three, create thyself. And lastly, give thyself. Let's explore each of these steps. Step number one, know thyself. In quality number one, connecting with people, there is a section entitled Awakening Empathy and Intuition. In this section, I shared a very personal experience entitled The Chicago Dream. Go back there with me for just a few moments. In this dream, I am dragging my life experiences behind me. Some of these experiences are painful, and others are shameful. And all are tinder for that fire of shame and blame and fear that we can have raging inside our souls. Well, I'm instructed to empty the sack, pick up the most painful experience, and examine it. It is critical to note that first, I am instructed. There is a power greater than me, instructing me to take certain actions, actions I was unwilling or unable to take on my own. To know ourselves, we will want to first surrender and submit to a power greater than ourselves, even if it seems too difficult or even impossible at the time. Next, in partnership with that power, our greatest cheerleader, we will want to engage in a truthful and introspective evaluation of our life, past and present. We will want to find out how we think and what impact these thoughts might be having on our life decisions and actions. Are these thoughts supporting or sabotaging our life? We will want to take a personal inventory of illnesses and addictions, if we have any. We'll also want to identify our gifts and talents and physical capacities, our spiritual beliefs, our finances, and the condition of our current relationships. You see, when we drag our past behind us, we are attempting to avoid what is real. We have tried to forget it. We have tried to pretend that it was different, that it didn't happen. We have blamed others. We have even tried in vain to justify our actions and explain away our results. And lastly, we have blamed ourselves. Unwilling or unable to face the truth of it, we drag it behind us. Facing the truth about our lives is not about self-condemnation. It is about shedding light on the truth. What comes is a sense of peace. The truth will set us free. It is denial that keeps us in an emotional prison. This is a great secret to know. Og wrote in scroll number one, I have surrendered my free will to the years of accumulated habits, and the past deeds of my life have already marked out a path which threatens to imprison my future. My actions are ruled by appetite, passion, prejudice, greed, love, fear, environment, habit, and the worst of these tyrants is habit. Therefore, if I must be a slave to habit, let me be a slave to good habits. My bad habits must be destroyed and new furrows prepared for good seed. Now, this is a very poetic way of discussing changing a neural pathway in our brain. We actually are creating a new furrow. We're plowing a new way of thinking. We're planting seeds and growing a new neural pathway. What we know about the brain is when that is grown, the brain will prune off the old bad thought. It's called synaptic pruning. And we'll think differently and act differently. And thus, a new habit is born. Oh, take courage. Don't let fear keep you from looking. As you so acutely know, the effort and energy expended to avoid the truth about our past and current life is both exhausting and damaging. These events have already or are already happening. We do not create them by looking at them. We are just facing the truth about it. Old habits of thinking and acting, and seeing it for what it is. One of the most sacred gifts of human life is that when we finally shed light on our lives, we somehow know what is good, and we know what needs to be amended. Remember, I've quoted this a couple of times to you, but Og summed it up when he said, "Within me burns a flame, which has been passed from generations uncounted." And this is the peace. "And its heat is a constant irritation to my spirit to become better than I am." Instead of fighting this flame, we are now going to surrender to it. This has become better than I am. And I will. I will fan this flame of dissatisfaction and proclaim my uniqueness to the world. Step two is to choose thyself. Let's go back to the Chicago dream. I've emptied the sack. I'm holding a painful experience in my hands, and I'm instructed to engrave it on my heart. This act of engraving an experience on our heart is significant. It is, in essence, the transition from being a victim, dragging this behind me, and becoming a victor, owning it. As a victim, we drag these experiences around, dwelling on our pain and the damage it has done to us. We want to be someone else, somewhere else, doing something different. In doing so, we become self-absorbed and self-focused on how the world and all of our challenges are negatively impacting us. We can engage in a truthful, endless, and futile attempt to pursue the unachievable, a life that is different, free from pain and stress, one in which this is not happening or did not happen. As a victor, we make the conscious choice to own these experiences, and they become part of our character, part of who we are. We choose us. These experiences become small Gethsemanes that have uniquely prepared us to fulfill our purpose on this planet. When I use the word Gethsemane, I mean that this is a moment when we really don't want to take upon ourselves the ownership of these experiences, but we willingly surrender and do so that we can more fully fulfill our mission, so that we can have empathy and more clearly see the pain that another may be suffering. This is not about owning the burden and guilt from the experience. That's what happens when we're dragging it behind us. It is about owning the feelings and impact that such an experience can cause. We've been there and lived to tell about it. We have also lived to more effectively feel what another person may be feeling. Let's lighten up just for a moment. I'll give you a silly example. My college football playing weight was 175 pounds. Now, coming out of high school, I was converted from a linebacker to a free safety. I was just fast enough to make the third team. Now, I joke that my real position was a bench warmer, and in those brutal Idaho winters of 71 and 72, we needed the benches to be warmed. Now, it didn't take long for my subpar athleticism to catch up with my vivid mental image of being a professional football player. Even with dogged determination, all the steroids in the world wouldn't make me 3 inches taller. Maybe 50 pounds heavier, but not taller. Well, the strain of competing at the college level took its toll. A series of nagging injuries that remain to this day, and my football career came to an unceremonious end. It was time to reevaluate. Where am I? What assets do I have? This is what I have to work with. Now, all the wishing, lamenting, complaining, pleading with God, and ultimately anger could not change what was. I had to choose what I had. I had to choose me, warts and all. Football was over. Was my life over? Was this the end of everything? It easily could have been, and is for many. But once we've identified the kind of person we have been and the assets with which we have to work, we will want to accept ourselves. This is the clay we have to work with, the cards we've been dealt, if you will, the circumstances of our life. Too often, and in fantasy, we make vain attempts to imitate others, creating unrealistic expectations that, when unmet, leave us feeling less than, worthless, unworthy, even worse than we felt before. Do we often wish that things could have turned out differently? Of course we do. Who wouldn't? But the past cannot be changed. What is, is. These experiences can either burden and canker our soul, destroy our worth, negatively impact others, and in short, impede that mission and purpose, or they can be used as reference points by which we can better understand and serve others. We cannot start building our lives on fantasy or a false premise. There is no limit to the bottom at which we may have to start rebuilding. But quoting Dr. Hartman, "But no matter how despicable you are to yourself, you must choose yourself, accept yourself as the one you are. I am the one I am," end quote. This is the truth. This is the foundation on which we can begin to rebuild our lives. And the truth is, there is also no ceiling to the growth we can achieve when we start from here. In the dream, with ownership came one more surprise. There was an immediate sense of relief, peace of mind. That came when all of these experiences were owned and engraved on my heart. It was not burdensome to carry them in the heart. It had an unlimited capacity, room, and to spare. It was a welcome discovery. Now, Og writes, "I am nature's greatest miracle. I have been given eyes to see and a mind to think. And now I know a great secret of life. For I perceive at last that all of my problems, discouragements, and heartaches are in truth great opportunities in disguise. I will no longer be fooled by the garments they wear, for mine eyes are opened. I will look beyond the cloth, and I will not be deceived. Know thyself, and choose thyself, and build from here. And a few years from now, you'll look back in amazement how all of the painful pieces became foundational to the success you are now enjoying." Well, third, we want to create ourselves. As creation from this bedrock of truth commences, miracles will happen. We will want to make the most out of the clay we've been given. As I said a few moments ago, the cards we've been dealt, the circumstances in which we find ourselves. Dr. Hartman writes on this topic, "You must start as early as you can, but it is never, I repeat that, it is never too late." End quote. And once we know ourselves, warts and all, and choose ourselves, warts and all, we turn our focus to creating the most we can with what we have been given. We are only impeded in creation when we want to be someone else, somewhere else, doing something different, and attempt to use this baseless desire as a foundation for creation. Again, when we begin creation from a bedrock of truth, the sky is the limit. Og encourages us with these words, quote, "Never will I be satisfied with yesterday's accomplishments, nor will I indulge any more in self-praise for deeds which in reality are too small to even acknowledge. I can accomplish far more than I have, and I will. For why should the miracle which produced me end with my birth? Why can I not extend this miracle to my deeds of today?" It's like saying, after all, I am nature's greatest miracle. It is time to realize your full potential. We are nature's greatest miracle. It's time to let go of those vain attempts to imitate others. It's time to own your uniqueness, display it in the marketplace, and proclaim it, yay, sell it. Begin to accent your differences and hide your similarities. And be proud of the difference. Well, know thyself. Choose thyself. Create thyself. And then we're ready for step four. Give thyself. In the Chicago Dream, the crowning principle came when I turned and for the first time noticed that the man standing before me was also dragging his sack behind him. In other words, I finally saw that he too was in pain. Feeling what he was feeling, I knew the questions to ask. In asking, he knew that I knew where he was and didn't need to fix him. I was accepting. And acceptance did not require agreement, just a willingness to ask, and to listen, and to understand. Walls came down because I had become a safe place. This awareness that I was a safe place healed my torn soul. Dr. Hartman tells us how to do this. He says, this means forget all limitations. Be generous with our own self. Give our own self to our fellow men and to the world. Love your neighbor as yourself. Throw your bread on the water. End quote. It is in the giving of ourselves to others that we finally find our true self, our true worth, our true capacity. And our pain and suffering finally has meaning and purpose. Dr. Hartman concluded, quote, to love yourself and within yourself your fellow man is thus the end result of a chain of self-discoveries, from self-knowledge, know thyself, to self-choosing, choose thyself, to self-creation, you know, create thyself, to self-giving, give thyself. Now, this whole thing may seem a little technical. Dr. Hartman was a mathematician and a philosopher with a law degree. Let's see if we can't look at it from a different angle. So take a deep breath. See, when we seek to know our real selves and become increasingly transparent, you know, no more secrets, no more lies, no more pretending, we become real. When we choose ourselves, we focus on what we have. We stop trying to imitate and impress others and more freely uncover and develop and magnify our own natural strengths, our natural genius. Thus, we become genuine. When we begin to create ourselves using the clay we've been given, not wishing we were someplace else, but what we've been given, we grow into the person we were meant to become. In doing so, we become authentic, authosectic, a real self. Again, turning back to Og and this very familiar phrase from Scroll 4, that I'm not on this earth by chance. I am here for a purpose. And that purpose is to grow into a mountain, not to shrink into a grain of sand. Henceforth, I will apply all my efforts, that's using all of our gifts and talents, the clay with which we've been given, and become the highest mountain of all. And I will strain my potential until it cries for mercy. You see, the more honest and transparent we become with ourselves, the more we are able to get out of our own way. We grow unfettered by fear and shame. Our cup runs over. We have more and enough to spare. We give of ourselves freely and are fed instead of feeling depleted. We find our power to love ourselves and thus love others growing exponentially. We have tapped into an infinite reserve. Now, prior to tapping into our natural genius, We were quite literally looking for love in all the wrong places. Or restated, looking for value in all the wrong places. And we discover that the power to love ourselves and others has always been in our own backyard. I vividly remember a dream from my childhood. At the time, we were living in a small town just a few miles away from a Thiokol solid-fuel rocket engine test plant. In this dream, I remember sneaking out of the house one night. I was in the backyard. It was dark. I had a shovel in my hands, and I remember this powerful feeling that there was a treasure buried in my backyard. I selected a space that spoke to my heart, and I began to dig. It was about 3-foot by 3-foot section. About 3 feet down, I hit something hard. Clearing away the dirt, I found a treasure chest. I opened it to find a bottomless chest filled with mounds and mounds of quarters. Well, I was a 6-year-old coin collector at the time, and a quarter was a really big deal. Something I was paid for, you know, an entire day of pulling weeds. This was truly a priceless treasure. I've reflected on that dream many times throughout my life. Whenever I am tempted to go out there and search for treasure, I look inside me and in my life and those closest to me. It has never failed. The greatest treasures have always been found in my own backyard, even in the darkest night. Often, the sunlight of success needs to be removed so that we can see these treasures. When we have the courage to dig deep and know ourselves and then choose ourselves, we will discover a very real treasure. With this treasure, we can create the most with what we've been given, and we're often surprised at the extent of the creation. And as we do this, we will begin to discover that we have just tapped into that infinite supply of power. Power to love ourselves and others. This is a great secret of success.